What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 40 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, joined by the hip-hoppin' Easter Bunny of Animal Crossing.
Ooh, I love
Claire
that
Helmberger.
One.
Claire Helmberger. That's you.
That's me. That's awesome. Yeah, it's currently Easter as of recording this, so that is perfect for, you know, Bunny Day. Animal Crossing.
Everyone's favorite event in Animal Crossing, right?
Hey, you know, I think...
It's just the best.
I think they heard the criticism because the decor from what I've seen so far this year, and I was really, really lax this week about playing, so I didn't get to see all of it, but it's far cuter. Like, okay. I actually have an urge to collect all of it.
You're getting things that are, like, actually things you would want for your house.
Exactly.
Riddle me this, though, because my least favorite part of Bunny Day was I was still obsessed with the fishing and things.
Right.
If I go fishing during Bunny Day, am I still basically only catching eggs?
I don't know because I haven't fished any eggs, but I also haven't fished that much.
Okay, this is critical investigative journalism.
But they're
Need you to do.
They're still all over the ground, though, so you're not sure if you're going to dig up a fossil or an egg. But at this point in the game, I finished my fossil collection about 6 months ago,
so
I don't
chilling.
Always okay, dig up what's on the ground anyway.
I just mean that's my favorite part of the game is the collecting of the
things
of
yeah.
the things and the cataloging.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's as many eggs. It seems like you catch more of them by, like, I don't know. There's
general exploration.
Yeah, there's just a...
That's fair.
I think, like, a lower percentage in general than there was before.
Okay. I'm more inclined since you're saying the items are more worth the time investment. So
although,
that's cool.
From what... I haven't been able to craft anything yet. I haven't, like, got any new recipes for crafting with the eggs. So I still don't have much incentive to collect them because the recipes you craft with the eggs are still last year's gross-ass recipes.
Gotcha.
The ones that I really, really like are the things that you can buy in the store so far.
That's fair.
That's what I've been trying to collect more of, that decor. And it's mostly, like, outdoor stuff, which I find kind of fun. It's, like, cute little topiaries and
boxes cool.
and stuff. Yeah, no, it's very cute. So I'm excited to play today's event and see where it takes us.
Very good. But, listeners... This is not about Animal Crossing.
No.
Our discussion. We are talking about... Let's jump right into We've Got the News.
Yeah.
Our weekly news discussion of breaking news in the games industry. So this week we had a cool story pop up. MLB The Show is coming to Xbox Game Pass. This article comes to us from Adam Bankhurst at IGN. Microsoft has confirmed that MLB The Show 21 will be arriving on Xbox Game Pass on its launch day of April 20th, 2021 for both Xbox Series X and S... as well as Xbox One. Announced on Xbox Wire, the once PlayStation-exclusive franchise is arriving on Xbox consoles for the first time this year, and Xbox Game Pass subscribers will be able to enjoy the standard edition of the game on consoles, as well as on Android phones and tablets via xCloud Gaming Beta if they have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. MLB The Show also features cross-play and progression, meaning you will be able to play across the platform and generation of your choice and play with your friends no matter where they choose to play. Just last week, we were able to exclusively reveal the first gameplay of MLB The Show 21 alongside an interview with Sony San Diego gameplay designer Raymond Russell. Yesterday, the team shared a look at some of baseball's greatest legends will be on next-gen will look on next-gen consoles. Sorry, that was kind of a tongue twister. Including Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Fernando Valenzuela, and more. MLB The Show was first released on PlayStation 2 in 2006 and has been exclusive to PlayStation platforms since then. While Xbox fans will be able to enjoy the game later this year, there is still hope for Nintendo fans as the company retweeted the announcement in 2019 that the game was going multi-platform, hinting we may see it on Switch in the future. So a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
What's your key takeaway from this announcement?
I just think it's a really big deal for Game Pass. I think that it sounds like it has this has a lot to offer for a lot of different fans, and I think it's probably going to get them a lot of new Game Pass subscribers because they're like, oh, I can have access to all of this plus a bunch of other games. It seems like a great deal. So I think that's a big get. What do you think?
I totally agree. And to add to that, I think it adds so much value to Game Pass as a sports fan. If you're super into sports games, you have access through EA Play to Madden, to FIFA. Now you have The Show, you have NHL, you have countless titles that's, you know, for the price, you're saving so much money.
Right.
If you want to play all these up-to-date sports franchises.
Exactly.
Personally, as a huge baseball fan, I say huge, like, in air quotes, because I'm ultimately not a huge sports fan, but I have always loved baseball, and that has always been the sport that I've enjoyed the most, whether it was watching or playing as a kid. But I was just really excited about this announcement. I've always loved MLB The Show, also as a longtime PlayStation fan, and I think it's an incredible franchise, and just the level of realism and the graphical fidelity and the recreation of every ballpark in America. And recently, in recent iterations, like they mentioned, they've been doing moments where you can relive historic moments in baseball history, which is really cool, like Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron, like Adam Banghurst mentioned in his article. Stuff like that I think is really cool. And I'm just really excited for more people to play this game because it's sold well on PlayStation, but I don't think as many baseball fans have checked it out as they probably wanted to. Right. And so now that it's on Xbox, that's rad. And then on top of that, it being on Game Pass is incredible. And I think it really just reiterates the power and ultimately like staying longevity of Game Pass, because just this past week, we got the announcement that MLB The Show was coming to the Game Pass, and then Outriders launched day and date on Game Pass. And we're to the point where now third-party games are releasing day and date on Game Pass, and I think that's a big shift. You know, there's been rumors, mill talk, that Ubisoft wants to add their streaming platform to Game Pass, putting most of their back catalog on Game Pass, which
that'd be a big deal too.
At that point, it's a really interesting approach that Microsoft has to this generation, because in terms of just like the amount of games to play on their platform, they kind of went out, because there's definitely more to play on Xbox through backwards compatibility, through Game Pass, and through these different services, whether or not these are the new hot titles that people want to play. But when I jump on Twitter the past couple days, everyone's talking about Outriders. Everyone's trying to jump on the servers for Outriders. And I know there's been a lot of technical difficulties with that game, but people want to play it, and people are able to play it immediately for free on Game Pass. So things like that are really something, and I think MLB will look at years down the road as a turning point for when we started to see more third-party titles on Game Pass.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's going to be... I think that they're really creating an ecosystem with Game Pass, and the more they add to it, the more it's going to really pull them ahead in the quote-unquote console wars.
On, I think, episode 4 of the podcast with Jacob McCourt, when we first saw the first game showcase for Xbox Series X, how are developers making money off of their game being on Game Pass? Install base is smaller. Is Microsoft paying them the difference? And if so, how is Microsoft making money off of it? And I have to imagine they're losing money year over year right now, but I think they're trying to build towards the future, get consoles in people's hands. Obviously, xCloud is a big factor. Once that's available on an iOS platform, there's a mass amount of people that Phil Spencer has mentioned in interviews that like a streaming stick akin to a Amazon Fire Stick is something they've considered for xCloud. So imagine if Xbox was widely accessible to basically everyone at a very low cost. They just have to get a controller and an Xbox Fire Stick type device for their TV, or they can stream it through their phone and not even need a controller. Things like that could really broaden their ecosystem to where they could be massively profitable. And I mean, they're a multi-billion dollar company, so they are, but you know what I mean? Like on the level of an Apple or whatnot, where they have that type of security. But yeah, I'm just very curious about the business, like behind the scenes with Game Pass and how those deals are going down and who's being paid what and who's covering the expenses for some of this, because I look at it, I'm like, wow, that's incredible. How do they do that?
Right. I wonder how much of a role it plays where games are removed from Game Pass after being on it for a certain amount of time.
They pay for a timed exclusivity.
Yes, you have to buy them if you want to continue playing them after you've checked them on a Game Pass.
It's possible, but then you have to look at, I wonder about like their first party lineup, like now including Bethesda Studios. I ultimately think the majority of Bethesda's titles will be exclusive to Game Pass, and they'll stay on Game Pass. But like, imagine how much money Deathloop could make if it was on. Well, Deathloop's not a good example because that's exclusive to PlayStation, at least for a time. But let's go with Starfield. If Starfield was cross-platform, from the creators of Elder Scrolls and Fallout comes a space RPG. That game would do is going to do gangbusters. But I ultimately think it's exclusive to Xbox. So I'm wondering what they are paying Bethesda to incentivize them to do that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. While still making a profit. I don't know. I don't have a business degree. I don't have the expertise to speak to this. It's all just very interesting.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested to learn more because I think this is one of those eras of gaming that someone needs to write a book about. I want to hear Phil Spencer's perspective years down the road when he's like not working at the company. He's retired. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like what was going on in this situation?
Yeah. That'll be really interesting to learn more about.
Because sometimes it seems too good to be true. I don't mean to say that in like a negative light, but it's not that it's bad, it's just like how are they making this work,
right?
Anyway,
yeah,
I digress. Shall we move on to our title track?
Let's do it.
So this week for our title track, your two favorite co-op buddies, Claire and I, played It Takes Two for review, and we are absolutely loving it.
We're about
I would say halfway.
Yeah, it seems like halfway,
give or take. So we can't give our impressions of the story as a whole. We can still talk a lot about our overall impressions of the gameplay, the art style, and just the writing and kind of the sense of the world that we got in our time playing the game. I think we've spent about 4 hours playing. And yeah, just really enjoying the hell out of it. What have you thought so far
in
our early hours?
I have really, really loved what we've seen so far. It reminds me of kind of like The Borrowers kind of vibe. I don't know if you've ever the movie and the book audience. And I think the most recent chapter that we played also gives me major Redwall vibes. So I'm really enjoying a lot of it. I've always really been into like the idea of like miniature things and things made out of smaller things. I've always liked that. So I'm super in. Do you want to give the listeners a brief overview of the story of the game? And
yeah, I was thinking that might be good just for if people haven't heard of this game, and what's the setup and just like the overall vibe. So this game comes from Hazelight Studios, who are known for Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, and A Way Out, which are both kind of turning points in the co-op genre of games. Specifically, they're really into local co-op games.
Yeah.
So It Takes Two is, I would call it a romantic comedy style game with its story where you control, each player has their own character, and you are controlling. You can play locally or online, but the game is in split screen. So you are completing puzzles and platforming and different action set pieces. The really cool thing about this is that the story is told through the so you play as a mom and a dad. And the story takes place through the imagination of their young daughter as she's processing the divorce of her parents. So you play as those parents. And it's really imaginative and really cool. And I love the whimsy that the game has. And I think A Way Out was trying to be this very like crime drama, a little more serious, but also very campy in its own sense because of the writing. It Takes Two is like this magical journey that you're on, and the way they've embraced just the anything can happen child imagination vibe, I think is such a cool way to go about because it allows them to do so many interesting things in terms of its gameplay. I don't want to get into like super specific segments, but just to like set up things, you're playing as the child's Alice's dolls.
Rose.
I'm sorry. Why do I always think her name is Alice? I don't know. Anyway, you're playing as her dolls, and you are running through the trees in the yard, or you're exploring the shed out back, and there are all these...
Or you're, like, inside the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, and it's really cool because every, like, boss fight or every, like, story encounter you have in this imaginative world connects to the real world in some way. Mm-hmm. So, like, the divorced couple May and Cody got into a fight about who would fix the vacuum cleaner, and so then... The boss is the neglected vacuum cleaner that's sad you threw him away.
Or they didn't take care of the wasp's nest in
yeah,
the tree.
Yeah, so then you're fighting wasps as you're doing platforming and running around. And there's moments of the game that really remind me of Ratchet and Clank in a really great way, where you're rail grinding through sections and you're
really
jumping
fun.
And you're kind of flying through areas. There's a... section where you get like weapons and kind of different, you each get your own different weapon, and that's the other cool part of the game is that each player has like unique skills, so you're like solving puzzles and coordinating together, and
it's quote teamwork,
it takes
for sure.
two to like the title of the game to solve some of these puzzles, and I think the puzzles are really thoughtfully done, and I haven't found any of them to be frustrating, but I've definitely found all of them to like
require some thought.
For the most part, there have been a couple like, oh, use your thing to open it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's the key to the door or whatever, but like most of it's like, oh, okay, what do you, Claire, what do you see on your screen? I see this, so I think you can interact with this object, and if I time that while I'm interacting with that object. I was gonna ask you, Claire, as someone who, you play a fair bit of games, but would you recommend this game to, I know there are a lot of listeners that probably have a significant other that doesn't really play games at all. Mm-hmm. Do you think this game is very gameplay intensive in that way? Could someone play it with their significant other or their friend if they weren't into games?
I could see aspects of it being frustrating if you like have no experience with video games, just getting used to the mechanics and the buttons and whatnot. But I do think that it's super accessible and the story is so engaging that if you have a... someone you want to play this game with who doesn't really play video games that much, I think it would still be really fun. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. The only thing I would say that could be potentially frustrating is some of the platforming sections. There are some
a little bit challenging.
A little bit of quick reflex, a little bit of timing. But the thing is, the game's respawn is so quick.
Right.
And it checkpoints you so regularly, even in boss fights and things like that. So if you do die, you're quickly back into it.
Right.
And I always enjoy the moment-to-moment gameplay enough that, like, it was always just fun messing around. And we kept, like, cackling as we would die if we, like, accidentally missed a dash or something as we were platforming, because it was just really funny. And then we were instantly back into it. It's not Mario 3D World where you're losing lives and you have to start the level all over again. Like, nothing like that. It's, in that sense, it's very low pressure.
Yeah, it definitely felt, like, way less frustrating than Mario 3D World or even Sackboy.
Because
you can just die as many times as you need to get through the puzzle.
And in terms of, like, there's, like, aiming mechanics in the game, there's a lot of aim assists.
Yeah,
it's very forgiving. I would say it's infinitely more forgiving than A Way Out, where there was a lot of cover-based shooting and the shooting mechanics weren't the strongest part of the game, whereas I would say the gameplay of this game definitely shines through.
What did you think
of the art style and the graphical fidelity of the game?
Oh, I love it. I think it's beautiful. Between the the graphical fidelity and the like the water textures and the lighting and stuff, it's all really pretty. But in terms of the art style, like I was saying, I love seeing things made out of smaller things. Like there's one instance where there are some chairs that are made out of bottle caps and stuff like that. I've always just loved that kind of stuff. Like, I was super into fairy gardens when I was a kid and dollhouses and just like people making their own miniatures. I just love it, so I'm super into all of that.
It reminds me of like Toy Story
too,
in a way, of like the whimsy and the different objects playing a role and things like that.
And just the design of it and the, you know, the bouncy mushrooms and the walking around on the tree.
Yeah.
It's just really cool to look at. Like, I just like looking around.
I love the art style too, and it totally, like, it just warms my heart, and it feels like I've jumped into a storybook.
Yeah.
I remember recently on Twitter, Kyle Stevenson, friend of the show, made the comparison to the Pagemaster,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a really fun idea and one of my favorite movies as a kid. Yeah. And I think totally has that like energy and
for sure.
heart that this game has.
Well, and there's also the book character.
Right, that too. And in addition to that, I think it's really clever what they do with perspective mm-hmm. in terms of visuals yeah. with the different screens. And we're playing it locally, but even when you're playing it online, you still get to see the other right. player's screen because you're always playing in split screen. And just there's, I would have never thought this game would have these like moments where I like stop and go like, oh my gosh, look at that waterfall. But it does. It has those yeah. breathtaking moments. And to see it like pan out in different ways from different angles from the different camera perspectives is really cool. And like, when you're doing, like, for example, I mentioned the Ratchet and Clank rail grinding segments, when you're one of you is doing part of a segment and then the other person's jumping the air while the other person's still grinding and yeah. things like that. Like, it's really cool it's to really see cool. that, like, change of perspective. And the way they pace it, I think, is really smooth and really interesting, whereas I felt like sometimes in A Way Out it could be a little clunky.
Yeah, for
whereas
sure.
this definitely feels like, okay, they've really learned a lot of it lessons feels and tight. Really. Yeah.
Yeah.
And from a technical perspective, too, it feels really polished.
Yeah. I'm just loving our time with this.
Yeah,
one.
Me too.
I can't wait to play more.
Yeah, I'm just really enjoying our time with it as well. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the writing of mm-hmm. the game. And obviously, we haven't finished it, so we can't comment on the story arc as a whole. But I just wanted to give Hazelight a pat on the back and kudos because I think this is a drastic improvement from the writing in A Way Out. Not that I thought the writing in A Way Out was bad. I think it was serviceable.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the story for what it was, but I don't think it was by any means like incredible character development, incredible moments like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas I definitely think It Takes Two is a huge step forward.
Yeah.
And while we've been talking about the idea of whimsy and imagination, and they just capture all of that so well, and there's great humor between May and Cody, yeah. the two playable characters.
They have really believable chemistry.
Yeah, and really great voice acting, too, yeah. as well. And just their banter, I think, is really well executed. And their relationship feels very believable,
mm-hmm.
which in a romantic comedy game where they're the center of it, it feels very believable. And then their daughter, Rose, she also feels very believable as well. You know, she doesn't want her parents to get divorced. She found this self-help book that she's going to try to help her parents, and she's trying to talk to them about if they can be friends again. Like, it all just feels very grounded, but not in a way that doesn't make the story engaging and fun.
Right.
I'm really curious to see how the ending ties up to see if we feel as strongly about the arc overall, but yeah. the way it's going, I'm really enjoying the writing moment to yeah. moment.
I'm also just really intrigued to see how the story ends, because right now, of course, and I think the game wants you to, you're rooting for Rose and you're rooting for
yeah,
them to get back
together
and stay together. But I wonder if that's how it'll go, or if it'll have some kind of twist, or they'll still decide to go their separate ways, but still be friends in the end, or, you know, co-parents or whatever. It'll be interesting to see what they do, especially because A Way Out had such a twist ending.
Right.
I wonder
there
if there'll be a
11th hour
yeah.
switch flip, so to speak.
I wonder if there will be some
spoiling.
Sort of twist at the end of this game, too, or
I don't
what that
know.
Would be.
I ultimately feel this game has a happier tone than A Way Out, so I hope it ends in a happier
yeah.
way, but not trying to spoil A Way Out, but it's been out a while. But yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting thought. I also just wanted to add a tidbit that I think the writing of the game is incredibly clever. We commented earlier about like how things in Cody and May's real life are influencing their imagination
experience
and journey that they're having
as adults.
In Rose's world. Yeah, with the vacuum and things like that. I just think it's so clever, and whoever thought of that, Joseph Ferris, director of the game, and I think he was a big influence on the writing too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really cool, and it makes yeah. me really interested. It also kind of foreshadows what you're going to be dealing with, as it foreshadows like issues
right.
in their real life and things like that. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So with that being said, what do you think is the future for Hazelight Studios? They've kind of, I would argue, perfected this co-op genre of local co-op story-based games. What do you want to see from them next?
I honestly just want to see more games like this. It's so much fun. Not necessarily exactly like this. I don't know, maybe we'll get some sort of sequel tie-in or something. But just this, they've polished, like you said, the gameplay mechanics and the writing in this game so much more than A Way Out that I just want to see more games with this kind of co-op, mandatory, collaborative teamwork kind of game in lots of different genres.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just as well put together as this one is.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm definitely in the same boat. I've been loving this game, and I've loved this studio since their debut game with Brothers. They've just gotten better and better, I would say, and I just want them to explore whatever they want to explore.
Yeah.
I want more co-op games like this, because I love playing co-op games with you, and I love games that were specifically designed to be played in co-op, I think, are really special. And, you know, whether it's in the world of It Takes Two or necessarily like child imagination, it doesn't need to be that specifically for me.
Right.
It could, I would totally play it, but if they want to explore something totally different, I'd be on board. But I just want them to keep working in this like creative co-op space.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
For sure. I think so too. I also wanted to throw in one other thought that I had about the gameplay.
Yeah, please.
I really appreciate, because I just remembered this. Appreciate how, like, there are the mini game competitions where you're competing against each other and seeing who wins.
Oh, we didn't talk really about those.
And those are fun, but they're also totally extra. And I really appreciate, coming off the heels of playing Sackboy and Mario 3D World, how in this game there's no, like, prizes or scorekeeping as you go throughout the level.
It's not like so-and-so's the king of the level
right.
and did better. Like, it's you're working together.
You're working
actively.
Together, and success for one of you is success for both of you. And I really appreciate that, because
yeah.
I do get really competitive, and I feel a little bit sore when, like, I'm going and exploring this part of the level, but then you collect more coins, and then you win, even
yeah.
though I found the one thing.
Well,
and it's, like
you were saying, the mini games it has you play, and It Takes Two as you're exploring and things, they're all just for fun,
right?
You know what I mean? It's for bragging rights that, oh, you won the target shooting, or
yeah.
I won the target shooting and you won like the tug of war thing.
I won the tug of war 3 times in a row.
You did. But you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
it's cool to have that. And then I do love games like Sackboy or Mario for different reasons, but I do think when you have that, like, competitive aspect, depending on the mood you're in, it can be kind of a negative thing.
Yeah.
Not that we, like, get into giant fights about it or anything, but it's just, like, a different vibe.
It is a different vibe.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
it's nice to just have this, like, wholesome co-op experience where you're working together.
You're really just working together.
And you're helping each other, and you both leave feeling equally positive.
Yeah, and you're experiencing it together, too.
Yeah.
Which is just really fun.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, cool.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll comment more as the year progresses. After we finish the game, we'll talk more
yeah.
about It Takes Two. It's in the front runner for my game of the year
yeah,
right
I'm
now,
loving
I
it.
Think. I loved Hitman. I've loved other titles that have come out this year, but I'm just having such a fun time playing co-op, and the writing and the art style is so whimsical, and it's just hitting the spot right
it
now.
It is.
Yeah,
yeah
so
for sure.
Listeners, highly recommend It Takes Two if you're thinking about picking up.
Very highly.
It's only $40 also, which I thought was nice.
Yeah.
And sometimes as a gamer, I'm like worried when games are less than $60 because it's like, oh, what is it not a full game?
Right.
It's definitely a full game, but I think they're just respecting your money and your time, and it's
yeah.
a shorter game, so mm-hmm. they're not charging $60. But in terms of production value, like, it's all
it's gorgeous
there, and it's super
yeah.
pretty. Yeah, so I think that stipulation has kind of gone away, especially with so many amazing downloadable titles that are,
right.
you know, $10, $15, $20 now.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. Anything else to add on It Takes Two, Claire, before we move on to questions with Claire?
I think we've hit on all my points.
Awesome. So what are we talking about this week for questions with Claire?
So this week's question, with It Takes Two tackling the romantic comedy genre, what other film or media genre would you like to see showcased in a new co-op game?
Cool question. I dig it. I dig it.
Well, thought-provoking. Do you want to go first, or do you want a second to think?
I have, like, a couple off the top of my head, but I also feel like I have a couple that I want to, like, stew on for a second. Mm-hmm. I'll throw out one.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and throw out yours?
To get the conversation going. With the recent release of Disco Elysium, and Greg Miller has been talking a lot about Judgment earlier this year, which is a Yakuza-style detective game. Really in the mood for a detective game. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking back to my time playing L.A. Noire and the detective crime-solving elements of Batman Arkham Origins, which I played through earlier this year. I really want a co-op detective game of some sort.
That'd be really cool.
Or like a murder mystery type game. I love playing Telltale games. Specifically, I really loved The Wolf Among Us, where you played as a detective investigating a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers, but for the first episode, but I mean, you knew shit was going down. But I think that could be a really cool co-op thing to, like, explore environments together and find clues and solve things, solve mysteries and whatnot. And I think it wouldn't be terribly gameplay intensive, so I could see it fitting into the Haze Light mold of having two players. And, like, I like the idea of, like, visually and Haze Light's games, you see different perspectives through the split screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be cool for an investigation detective game, because, like, you could be looking through a window and notice something outside while I'm examining evidence in the other room or whatever, and then we could come together and share our notes, and you know what I mean? I think that could be really interesting.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I'd be super down for that. I think something that would be really cool is a survivor exploration type of game, akin to like a Subnautica, where you and your partner are trying to adapt and build and collect and forage and uncover the mystery and try to get back home kind of game.
So a little more free form than like story linear.
Yeah. Well, I really do love the platforming it takes too, though. So I'm thinking more of a like contained and less of an open world, but like a open area kind of game. That could be kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'd be down for that for sure.
I could also see a survival horror game.
Oh, yeah. That'd be
and
cool.
This is totally in another direction than the whimsy of It Takes Two. But just because generally in like a Resident Evil 2 remake, the combat's a little slower and the shooting is a little slower than your typical like high-end octane action title. So I feel like that could work well in a Haze Light game. You're exploring an environment, maybe some of those investigative elements I was talking about where you're solving puzzles and things like that to open up new sections. I'm thinking of the police station in RE2.
Right.
That could be really cool in co-op.
Yeah, I could see that being awesome.
Once again, drastic departure from what they've done, but I think that genre of survival horror would work well.
Yeah.
And obviously there have been co-op survival horror games, but I'm saying like, I feel like what they've done, Haze Light Studios, is different than what any game with multiplayer has done necessarily, because they've built it from the ground up to be played that way, and not necessarily from an online perspective, but kind of emphasizing the local co-op perspective with the split screen element and the visuals. And there's so much thought that went into it being a co-op game, and I feel like that's different from you can play Resident Evil multiplayer online together, or you can play a mode in Gears of War where you run through the story together and you're a squad together. It's like, that is a co-op game, but I feel like there's a special level of intent that was put into Haze Light's games that I'm thinking of with this.
Exactly. Yeah. Where you have to work together and collaborate, and each person kind of has their own role in various different scenarios to play. Unless, like, you're just working together to accomplish something faster or easier, or maybe it levels with you and you're just, like, playing together, but it doesn't really change the gameplay at all. I think that, like you said, the intention behind these Haze Light games would be really cool in all of those genres. So I'd be down for any one of those.
For sure. I think we pitched some cool ones.
Yeah.
Do you have any other ones you want to throw out?
Keep an ear out. I really do like the kind of romantic comedy and the like, anything that delves into the characters' relationships to each other while they're also working together. I think whether it be, like you said, like a detective or a buddy cop type of story, or, you know, the romantic comedy, I think that's just a really good foundation. So that's not a very specific answer, but
for sure. I think it's a great format to deliver like smaller scale character driven stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just love to see more of these games, honestly. So I'm excited for the future.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, with that being said, we have a bit of a shorter episode this week, but that's okay. I think we've kind of ebbed and flowed and had some longer ones in the past.
Couple ones have been pretty long, haven't they?
So enjoy this short and concise review of a wonderful little game in It Takes Two. Claire, thank you so much for joining, as always.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping items. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. You can follow at Lukewarm Games on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And if you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts, a weekly blog written by yours truly, and much, much more. With that, have a fantastic week. Cheers, and happy gaming.